And now, for your feature presentation.
Just one, or two, or three, or four, but five, of course, five.
What's up, list nerds? I am your host, ex-video store clerk, screenwriter, and fellow list nerd Jason Kleberg, and this is Force 5, a show where I force my guests to come up with a movie-themed top 5 list topic, and then we reveal our picks on air. Before we get into this week's show, I do want to thank everybody who reached out to me regarding the loss of my dog after the last show. I got a lot of kind notes and saw a lot of listener dog pictures, which was great, and I am feeling a lot better now, so those conversations with all of you helped out quite a bit. If you ever want to send dog pictures or just talk movies with me, you can do that like everybody else. Well, most of everybody else was doing at force5podcast@gmail.com. All right, for this show, my favorite author, Dwayne Swierczynski, came back to the hot seat to talk top five movies featuring a musician in the cast. And if you listened to the last show Dwayne was on for, you know this man always brings interesting picks to Force 5. And he knows his movies. Outside of his film passion and knowledge, there's a few things to listen for in this episode. During this show, I learned about Dwayne's past as a musician. Which instrument did he play? Well, you'll hear. And one of my picks is actually in Dwayne's top five films of all time, and it was really fun to talk about that with him. Please support Dwayne Swierczynski by checking out the show notes and buying a book. They're not expensive. They read like a movie. They are amazing. If you're into crime, noir, you're going to find something that you like. And if you can't swing that, subscribe to his newsletter. You can do that totally free. Quite fittingly, the show going back into the vault this week is Top 5 80s Cult Classics with musician J-Zone. It's going to be available, along with all older shows, for free on the Patreon page. So head to the link in the show notes or use patreon.com/force5. For June's giveaway, we've got a sealed copy of 16 Candles on Blu-ray, and all you gotta do is be in the Patreon. You can do that for free. We do have some executive producers on this episode: Musa Mahmood, Ryan Verrill, Peta Beta, Ryan Goland, and Eric Peacock. If you want to be an executive producer, that's the $5 tier on Patreon, and that also gives you IMDb credit. Please take a moment to rate this show on whatever platform you're listening on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever. It only takes a second. It really helps the show. All right, all that out of the way, here's Dwayne Swierczynski and top five films featuring a musician in the cast. Welcome back to the Force 5 podcast. Tonight, my returning guest is my favorite author, Dwayne Swierczynski. He's the author of books like California Bear, Severance Package, The Wheelman, and Lush, and other tales of boozy mayhem. And his newest work, a collaboration which we'll get into in a minute, Lion and Lamb, is on bookstore shelves right now. Dwayne, how are you today?
I'm great and happy to be back, Jason. Thanks so much for having me. This is so cool.
Absolutely. I had a great time with you last time. You got a great topic this time too. Another like really deep topic with a ton of options. And we're going to get into that in a second. But last time you were on the show. Yeah, I know. Last time you were on the show, it was episode 124. We're in 175 right now. So it was 2 years ago, 50 episodes ago. What have you been up to since the last time you were on Force 5?
Speeding through time, obviously, because it feels like it was yesterday. But just writing. I'm just kind of trying to write my butt off. A new book came out, California Bear, that was out last year, and right now I'm adapting it for the movies, which is nice. Ooh. I have a co-writer, and we're trying to make, it's always hard to divorce your novelist self from the screenwriter self, because the novelist self is like, oh, it's all golden, put it all in, and the screenwriter part's like, this sucks, move it. There's no time for this stuff. So you gotta be like, be ruthless. It's almost having a bifurcated brain adapting your own stuff.
Yeah, well, you really gotta like chop out everything that's not essential, and in a book you could put whatever thoughts you want into it.
For sure. I mean, you realize you watch a movie kind of, and you really analyze how efficient everything is. It's startling how few words are spoken. And novelists like words. We love being wordy, so it's a different skill set, but it's fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is this going to be your first adaptation into a film?
Well, I've been paid to adapt my stuff before. Has it been made? No, not yet. But that's just for the stars to align, it takes a lot. This time I'm hopeful, though. The producer is Ryan Coogler. You may have heard of recent films as Sinners. Yeah, I mean, he and his company, they're wonderful. They've been great to work with. And I've I have hopes that, you know, if anyone has the, you know, the muscle to make something these days, it's Mr. Coogler. So I'm hoping that's the case, and we'll see. But yeah, I really, it's a great team. I have a co-writer, Gary Lennon, who's done a lot of TV, cool TV stuff over the years. So we're a good pair because we both keep each other honest, I think, with the work.
Have you seen Sinners?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. I mean, it's funny because you're on topic today. That kind of, that didn't qualify quite the same thing, but it's a musical. It's a vampire musical, which I just adored. Yeah. And aside from being in business with, I would have liked it even if, you know, I wasn't in business with. Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it. Yeah. I was saying it on one of these episodes. I saw, like, right after I saw it, I texted a friend and I was like, I'm going to buy a ticket to go back just to see that club scene in the, when they first start playing. Holy shit, that was like mind blowing to me.
Incredible. I mean, every turn felt like, okay, this is new. It felt fresh. Like everything felt like, oh, this is sort of familiar ingredients, but in this kind of cool gumbo, if you will, you know, that's like, what is this? This is amazing. But yeah.
Yeah.
And I can almost see the Sinners cinematic universe, you know, spinning out of that.
Oh,
there's
I'm
so
down.
Much to play with there. So I'm down for
so
it.
Much. Yeah. Let's see what they were doing before they returned, you know, back when they were in Kansas City.
Yeah, and that Irish guy, you know, I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, in case you haven't seen it, but man, I'm just fascinated by him. All these, that's the thing, if you have someone, and we'll get into this in our discussion, but like, to me, those little minor characters that kind of have this really full life behind their, it's like, and it, you sort of get a glimpse of it, but you want to see a whole movie about them, that always fascinates me, and that's hard to do, you know.
No kidding. Well, something else that's hard to do, and I've gone through this myself, is collaborating with somebody on a project. You collaborated with James Patterson on Lion and Lamb. He's one of the, I would say he's probably one of the most popular writers on the planet, just in terms of like stuff out there.
I would think so. I mean, everyone, if there's one writer someone knows, it's James Patterson at the airport. So it's kind of cool, actually. No, he's been great to work with. I mean, he's just, and people do always say, well, you must write everything. And like, you know how involved he is. It's kind of like, as far as like, he's like directing 18 movies at once, it feels like, because he's, you know, a lot of us, you know, do the heavy lifting, I guess, but he really is involved, you know, week to week on what we're doing. And often the outlines are all from his brain. So I'm kind of like fleshing out what he's already cooked up.
So I was going to ask about like that process. So the, was it that the story came from him and that everything else kind of came from you? What's that process like?
Well, like for Lion and Lamb, for instance, you know, he had the full outline from the novel. He kind of a great two-hander, you know. Though I guess what I brought to it was set in Philadelphia. So I kind of brought the Philly stuff to it. You know, I think I'm decent at adding some humor in, you know, unexpected places. That was the fun of it, you know, and just really giving these guys room to breathe. An outline is just, you know, it's funny when his outlines are not so much of like, you should do this, this, and this. It's more like, here is what I want the audience to feel, the reader to feel at this moment. Do that. So that's, I mean, it's a great direction because like, okay, you want them to laugh here? Cool. You want them tense as hell right here? I can do that too. Let's figure that out, how to do that. So that's what it's sort of like.
How did you link up with him? Is he doing that with other writers too? Or is it just like he was a fan of your work or you were a fan of his?
I'm pretty sure he lost a bet and got stuck with me or something. I mean, I like to joke that he has a lot of collaborators and I'm pretty much the Gary Sharon of James Patterson collaborators. Like, remember from Van Halen, very briefly? I don't know, that's a deep cut, but that's what I feel like. I'm like, who? You know, you think Van Halen, you think David Lee Roth, you think Sammy Hagar. No one remembers poor Gary Sharon. So that's kind of my role, I think. I'm sort of the obscure, you know. But I mean, he has, you know, he's written with Bill Clinton. He's written with Dolly Parton. He has no, I mean, really huge, you know, writers. I'm not sure how he treats them, but he's been golden to me, you know. We met, I think, through our publisher. I was being published through Little Brown, you know, Mulholland Books imprint, and that's his longtime publisher. I think at one point he was doing those book shots. They're like novella-sized, you know, stories you used to buy in supermarkets. And that was a great way of trying out new writers, I think. So I was basically trying out for the team.
Seems like you like working with him because you got something else cooking with him as well, yeah?
Yeah, in fact, the new novel out—it's out in September called "Billion Dollar Ransom." The title kind of says it all. It's a kidnapping story, and it's already actually been big news. Like, I think 2 weeks ago, Amazon/MGM they're doing it as a movie, which is kind of great. I mean, they've been sort of bought ahead of time, and
wow,
really cool people adapting it. So that'd be exciting to see. A little surreal too, you know, to see something that, you know, you worked on, you know, as just a series of words on a page, then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is this thing. So who
wow,
knows?
That's, you got all kinds of stuff cooking then. We're going to see your name everywhere pretty soon.
If it'll fit anywhere, yeah, but that's, my name's ridiculous, but thank you for that.
Yeah, what would just be Dwayne S.
Exactly.
<posters. laughs>
Precisely.
Well, Dwayne, last time you were on, we talked about some of the films that influenced you and your career. What are some of the things that you've seen lately that you've really liked?
Oh, God. The one thing I keep telling everyone you have to see, and I adore this movie, I saw it in the theaters like three times, was Oz Perkins the Monkey. I know that sounds odd, but boy, oh boy, was that an exercise in absurd, you know, nihilism that I didn't know I needed. It was just, you know, some people are like, what are you talking about? That was gross. It was, you know, it was sad. I'm like, yeah, that's why it was great. I mean, it just was to me a giant middle finger to like every studio note ever. Like, how about explain this? Like, no. It's just a monkey. He plays his drum and bad things happen. I just, you know, I love that. And it's a different take to it. I just saw the new Final Destination, which I really loved. And that was a lot of fun. That was a nice throwback. So they're almost like two halves of the same coin. Final Destination works really hard at playing by a set of internal rules. That's kind of cool. I admire that. But the monkey is just pure mayhem. And I really dig that. So I was into that a lot.
You know, all the stuff that's going on in the monkey that's strange and weird, the most unbelievable thing for me is that Theo James would be a loser. Because that guy's just
exactly.
Like... impossible.
Super handsome dude, super charming. Yeah, the cast is great. Yeah, I mean, across the board, I mean, the kills are so absurd. They don't make sense, but that's the joy of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some Final Destination parts of kills in there, too.
Oh, good Lord. I mean, the next thing, too, is like, I saw it on a Thursday, a few days before my birthday, and coincidentally, on my birthday, they had a pop-up here in L.A. at this church, and I was wondering, why a church? But I went to the pop-up. Oz Perkins was there, signing posters. It was awesome. It was actually a fake funeral for a certain character. I won't say who in case you haven't seen it, but it's great. It was well done. Like, why are we in a church? Oh, it's so-and-so's funeral. This is so cool. And outside they have the, again, I'm trying to spoil things, but there's a certain bus, a school bus full of people who don't have heads. So it was parked out front on Wilshire Boulevard, which you saw people like, you know, ordinary civilians walking by like, what the hell? What is this? You know, that made my birthday. I loved it.
That's awesome.
That's my, I'm sort of, you know, up sort of a proselytizing for the monkey of all things. But I love that movie.
No, it's super entertaining. Was the funeral for?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a nice, like, sort of bit of self-parody in person. Like, you know, it's over the top. Yeah. Great.
Sure.
In fact, they had the exclusive t-shirt they sold was the cherry pie thing. And that's, I had to have that. I'm not sure I'll ever wear it because it might horrify people, but I needed it for my birthday.
Oh, I get it. I got a couple of those shirts from my like Alamo Drafthouse
yes.
Marathons that I was like, I can't wear this around my kid.
No, exactly. Or polite society in general. Yeah. So I hear that.
I'm glad that you enjoyed those. Have you seen Companion yet? I was going to recommend Companion.
Oh, just saw that a few years ago. That was really cool.
Yeah.
I love that one too. Yeah. That surprised me because I was expecting kind of a more one note thing. And it was a lot of things at once. It was like, oh my God, this is really sci-fi. I mean,
yeah.
It's like if Philip K. Dick wrote a rom-com kind of, you know, it was kind of neat.
And it did another thing in that the monkey did where it just kind of like puts that stuff out there and lets you figure out like, oh, this is a little bit into the future, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I watched with a friend sort of, you know, in different cities, like watching it together, you know, those watch party things where we're both like, oh my God, what is this? You know, you can tell how excited you are about something when you're gleefully, you know, back and forth.
Yeah.
But you can't do it in a theater. You shouldn't do it in a theater. So that's the nice thing about watching at home.
No texting in the theater. Wait till
exactly,
you know.
Which is a good rule. I export that, but yeah, that was fun. A lot of fun, that one. Yeah. It's been a great time for horror. I mean, even like, was last year, Strange Darling, sort of horror noir adjacent. I mean, the most horrifying scene in that movie was Ed Begley Jr. making breakfast. That was amazing. Remember that?
Yeah.
Ungodly
totally
amounts
stoned
of butter.
Breakfast.
Yes, exactly. That was like great. I was like, oh, I'm cringing. Like, oh, my heart's twitching. And like, how can they eat that? But yeah.
I know.
Great stuff.
It was the jelly on top that really like, oh, I don't The rest I could do. I like the bacon, the eggs, the butter, but the jelly, come on, man.
Yeah, over the top, exactly. But that was a cool movie. Yeah, so I do, I mean, I'm, as you know, probably guessed, I'm drawn to the weirder movies and the ones that sort of take bizarre chances. And we've had a lot of those lately, I think, because Hollywood's in a weird place right now. I think it's having a crisis, you know, a serious mental breakdown. So what's squeaking out is all the, you know, the weird stuff, which is nice.
Yeah, but it's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Well, we've got a really fun topic today with an incredibly deep pool of options. We're doing top five films with a musician in the cast. I have a ton of honorable mentions here.
Ooh.
I think my list, like originally I came up with a list of five and those five people are not even on my list now. I've been like tinkering with it for 2 weeks and I just like,
same.
It's like finally I got to stop. This is the list.
my list evolved like same way. My original list was nowhere near like my list now because I kind of settled on some rules as I went along. I realized I got to narrow it down somehow. So I had a set of rules. Mm-hmm. And did you do the same thing? Sort of have a bit of like, okay, what qualifies? What doesn't qualify?
Yeah, well, let's talk about your how did you go about narrowing down your list? What were your rules?
Well, basically, I had to really like it a lot. And almost off the top of my head, remember that performance is like, man, I'd watch it again right now. Passing that test, okay. And to me, it couldn't be them playing a musician in the movie because it feels like a little like, you know, for instance,
ooh,
one movie on there, and this is in my honorable mention list, just to speak, well, I'll say that, but like certain movies are about that character as a musician. So it's like, okay, that's fine. I love those movies, but maybe for this, let's go a little more, you know, not obscure, but I look for things that they're playing a different character entirely than their stage persona, and they are having fun. Like to me, fun was the key factor. Like they're really just going nuts with this thing. That's kind of what was my guiding star. You know, is it fun? Is it unusual for them? And was it like kind of a lark almost, and not like about what they do? That's roughly what I was going for.
Yeah, so for me, it was pretty similar. Like it had to be somebody who I could buy their album in a store.
Yes.
And I also wanted it to be something where they're also known for music.
Yes.
Because there are some people who are known as actors and then they also have an album out. And I'll use Bruce Willis as an example. Like
exactly.
I could say he was a musician, but I'm not gonna have Die Hard on here because
right.
I see him as an actor. But there are certain people that I see and it's like, oh, I see them as a musician and I see them as an actor, or I see them mostly as a musician.
That's, I want the same thing. I was trying to go for mostly musicians, like, you know, Don Johnson, sure, heartbeat, catchy single, but he's an actor, you know, so yeah, one like a hardcore, like, yeah, musician and, you know, in their own regard, really well known for that. And maybe even like, almost like you're watching a movie, like, oh my God, he's in this? That surprise of like, what a great, you know, little, I don't know, a little treat in the middle of an otherwise crazy genre movie. That's what I was looking for.
Cool. I do have two people that play musicians in the movies that they're in. The other three are not, but...
yeah, I think that's the case too for me. No, I actually know none of them play musicians, but my honorable mentions have a few of those because I kind of bumped them out of the category once I realized.
All right, well, Dwayne Swierczynski, are you ready to get into our list?
I am ready.
You know what's going to happen? You know what's happening right now? How you know what's going to happen?
No.
Words? You just made the list!
Top five.
All right, well, I'll leave it up to you since you're the guest. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first with my number five?
You know, let me go first so that you can sort of school me and kind of tell me what the real choice should have been. I'll just, you know, a little bit back and forth that way. And in a rough order, but like, you know, all right, my first one was, I'll start with the musician, Alice Cooper in Prince of Darkness.
I've got a message for you.
This is the shape of fear.
You're not going to like it.
This is the color of hell.
What is it?
And this is the power of the Prince of Darkness. From John Carpenter, director of Halloween. A vision of the most powerful evil of all. Prince of Darkness.
Where are you?
Rated R. Starts Friday, October 23rd at theaters everywhere.
Ooh. John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. Now, that fascinates me because he's all over the cover. He's all over the marketing for this thing. He's hardly in it. He's in it for like 2 minutes, but memorably so. Do you remember him in that? I mean, as you know, one of the creepy unhoused people walking around the church and very memorable kill. And I remember that, or I didn't remember, I looked this up. John Carpenter and Alice Cooper are pals, go figure. And I think how this happened was Alice just said, hey, I want to visit your set someday. Can I come down and just watch you film? He's like, yeah, come on down. They're talking like, hey, you want to be in this? I'm like, yeah, what should I do? That's spontaneous. And all of a sudden, like, he's sort of the face of, you know, people think he is the Prince of Darkness, you know, if you look at the marketing and the poster. But I just, I don't think he says a word, actually, even. I haven't seen it in a few months, but it's really a great performance.
And it's a great movie, too. I think it's an underrated John Carpenter movie.
Oh, God, yeah. Creepy as hell.
You know, one of my other rules that I didn't specify was that they had to be playing somebody other than themselves. And I say because Alice Cooper almost made my list for his role in Wayne's World. Do you remember his role in Wayne's World?
That was, you know, I'm not kidding. That was my list for a while, too. It was like, but it broke that rule. Like, you can't cameo. It has to be something else, you know, the character you're inhabiting. But, oh, boy. I mean, that cameo lived rent-free in my head for 30 years now.
Yep. Every time I hear... Anything about Milwaukee, it's like, oh, Milwaukee. Yes, I get it.
or Delaware. look, we're in Delaware. Yeah. So, and speaking of that too, like for that same movie though, Meatloaf would have qualified because Meatloaf is playing not himself. Meatloaf is playing a bouncer. So that would have worked.
That's true.
And it's a great, great cameo or great little bit. But anyway, how about you? What was your number five?
Meatloaf, by the way, on my honorable mentions for a different movie.
Oh, so. Me too, actually. Me too. But we'll see.
All right. My number five is J-Lo in Selena from 1997. Oh. So this is one that does break that rule, your rule. But, I had to have Selena on here.
She took a dream and made it real. Now I'm dreaming. Jennifer Lopez.
I'm just so happy.
Edward James Olmos.
She's going to make it.
Selena, rated PG, now playing.
It's one of my wife's favorite movies, but it's also a really great role for J-Lo. So
yeah,
for listeners who haven't seen or heard of Selena, it's a biographical drama about the singer Selena and everything that she went through. So her upbringing from being in like a little small family band all the way up to becoming this international sensation. And yeah. Jennifer Lopez at the time wasn't actually known as a singer. She was known as being a dancer on In Living Color.
That's right. That's right. Early J-Lo role. I love that movie. Actually, that movie was on all the time in cable in the early 90s. And I somehow saw it like about a dozen times and haven't seen it since. I need to revisit it. But that's a great movie.
It's really good. It's really good. And it was one of those things where like I was familiar with her just because of the interstitials between skits in Living Color. And then she does this movie. And I remember my wife had told me that a lot of people in her community were really kind of worried about her doing this role because she's not Mexican American. She's Puerto Rican. And she like nailed this role. She was nominated for a Golden Globe for Best Actress for this. And it was kind of like her breakout hit. And then afterwards, she put out her first album On the Six in 1999. And then she went to release a bunch of stuff, won a bunch of awards. She even played a Super Bowl halftime show. And I think it's a really good, really important movie. So if you want to learn about a singer whose songs still play at every party that I go to with my wife, you got to check out Selena from 1997.
That is 97. Oh my God. I thought it was early 90s. You're right though. 97. Wow. I'm false memory of me watching this in my shitty apartment in the early 90s. So I guess I was, I'm not sure what that's about, but great movie. Good pick.
Yeah. Good one. All right. Number four for you.
Well, number four is, it's maybe a little obvious, but I love this movie and I love her performance in it. Debbie Harry in Videodrome.
Max Wren is a victim.
I woke up with a headache.
He has been exposed to Videodrome.
I've been hallucinating for a while, ever since...
What?
Since I first saw Videodrome.
Please, come to me now. Come to Nikki.
And Max Wren can do nothing to stop it.
Long live the new flesh.
It will shatter your reality.
Videodrome,
starring Deborah Harry and James Woods, a shocking new vision from the creator of Scanners.
She plays Nikki Brand, and it's like, I guess she does, is sort of playing a version of herself where like you imagine Blondie not really giving a crap about most things guys say and just being in touch with what she wants to do at all times. And it just works. And that movie is a freak fest top to bottom. It's bizarre. It's best watching at 2 a.m. when you're, just way too tired or, maybe under the influence of something, and you just go with it because James Woods is gloriously creepy. And I can't imagine anyone's playing against him except for Debbie Harry in this role.
Yeah. If you're a fan of like satire movies, I think Videodrome really nails that well, especially in the, what had come out, 83. So you're like right in that MTV generation. Yes. It's a really fascinating movie and it's got some bizarre imagery that I still to this day don't know how they pulled off in 1983.
Not at all. I mean, that's the magic of Cronenberg, right? I mean, everything looks sort of wet and goopy and all too realistic, actually. That's the sad thing, or the weird thing, the VHS tape and the certain bodily, orifice. Amazing stuff. It's a hard rewatch because it takes a lot out of you. But I think Debbie Harry is great, and she's just super cool. And I think she just did it for the fun of it. I'm not even sure she really had serious aspirations about anything acting-wise. She's having too much fun, but I love that. I admire that.
Yeah, she was great. That's a good pick. I thought about her. I never had Videodrome on my list, but I did think about her while I was constructing this list. So I'm glad that you had her on there.
Good. Excellent.
All right, I'm not really a fan of country music, and I actually didn't have any idea that this guy was a singer when I first watched this movie, and I only found out afterwards because I had to look him up because his performance was awesome. And this, there's actually two singers in this movie. This is Panic Room from 2002, and I'm talking about, of course, Dwight Yoakam as Raoul, yes, the terrifying home invader.
For them, it was the perfect home.
I love you.
But in a moment, everything changed.
People in the house.
How do we get into that room?
We can't.
We have to get her to come out.
Now.
Oh.
What's she doing?
Kill the phones.
He has no choice left.
You're gonna trust me.
But to risk everything.
We will find you.
Two-time Academy Award winner Jodie Foster. Panic Room. Rated R.
The other one that could have made this list is Jared Leto, who's also the singer of 30 Seconds to Mars. But Dwight Yoakam's performance in this, I mean, both of their performances are really good, but I walked out of this thinking, like, Yoakam is freaking terrifying, and I need to learn more about this guy. And then I learned, oh, shit, he's a country singer who's been, like, doing stuff forever. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so funny. I'm not to spoil things, but, like, he also makes an appearance later for me. You'll see. But...
Oh, okay. All right. He, this is awesome because it's two different movies, but, yeah, Fincher directed it, stars Jodie Foster as this divorcee who's just moved into this really beautiful New York brownstone with her teenage daughter, played by a very young Kristen Stewart. And the home has this really hidden high-tech panic room in case of an emergency. And of course they need to use it in their first night there because these three intruders break in looking for something that happens to be in that room. And the guys who are trying to get in, I mean, they're all amazing. They play off really well of each other. Forest Whitaker's the third one, but it's a really inventive looking film that has just a couple of characters. I think there's only like six real characters in it and they're all super awesome. But Dwight Yoakam, like I said, no idea he was a country singer. He's released 16 albums. He's won 2 Grammys. And then he's also been in a bunch of movies. And I'm not going to name them because I think I know which one you're going to say because it was
you,
like...
You probably do, but let's look into one. It. Yeah. Yeah. Actually, you'll see. But yeah, I'm so glad. I had the same reaction and we'll get into it. But yeah, exactly. I was sort of like, who is this guy? I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. And back then, it's funny. I've met some musicians over the years who tell me he's a really great guy. Like personally, he's a dude. Like he's a stand-up dude who will help you and give you the shirt off his back. Like this is good to hear. Because I think the people who play the bastards in films are usually the sweetest people. Or like the real villains are like really in real life, usually kind of awesome.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Because I always like it when I hear somebody in Hollywood's a nice guy.
Oh, that's a few sources. Yeah, he's a really good dude. So that's nice. You know, I'm not a country guy either. I'm not a big country guy. I mean, like some things, but not, you know. Didn't know him outside of Fight Club, a Panic Room at first. So yeah, exactly. And I guess number three is next. And number three was hard because I knew the guy I wanted to highlight. A huge fan of his. But then I thought about what performance really stuck in my brain. That's Tom Waits. Now, Tom Waits has been in a ton of stuff. I mean, Francis Ford Coppola loves him. I love him in Shortcuts. He was in Mystery Men of all the movies. He's been in a lot, you know. But of course, I can't ever forget his performance as Renfield in Coppola's Dracula.
Vincent Canby of the New York Times says Dracula is a testimonial to the glories of filmmaking. The Washington Post says Francis Ford Coppola is a visionary entertainer and miracle worker. Gary Oldman and Anthony Hopkins are sensational. Winona Ryder is irresistible. This is a visually spectacular, wildly romantic masterpiece. Yeah! Bram Stoker's Dracula at theaters now.
His hors d'oeuvres, insect eatings, you know, tray, his whole thing. Like, he's over the top. He's not the obsequious, you know, Renfield we know from the Universal movies or anything else. It's like he's his own person, and it's so Tom Waits. It really is. So as a big fan, of course, Dracula, we all know the story, but like I think it's underrated. I mean, that sounds weird to say about a Coppola movie, but his version of Dracula is pretty amazing. I mean, it holds up. It's inventive and all these really ways that are true to the book, because I've read the book a few times for fun. I mean, it really is. That also holds up. And it's sort of a mixed medium kind of movie. You see like all kinds of different styles and tones, and I really admire the hell out of it. And part of that wonderful buffet of weird is Tom Waits as the fly eating, you know, get me a cat. A cat will save me. So anyway, yeah, Tom Waits.
I didn't even think of that one either. Have you seen that in 4K?
No, I don't think I have.
The costumes and the sets on that were so amazing. When you watch it in 4K now, it looks like it was made yesterday. It's awesome.
Oh, that's great. I need to do that. Yeah, big favorite.
Definitely recommend that. Hey, listeners, jumping in here just for a second to give some time to today's sponsors.
Come to the warehouse and rent the hit movies you want when you want them with the Warehouse Movie Rental Guarantee. This week, the Warehouse guarantees you can rent Big, Crocodile Dundee 2 and Cocktail starring Tom Cruise. If we don't have a copy available, we'll give you a coupon for a free rental for one of these three hit movies. Only the Warehouse offers you the Movie Rental Guarantee. If you want to rent these hit movies, they'll be at the Warehouse, guaranteed. Where? The Warehouse.
Are you a film fan who loves the ultimate home video experience? Look no further than The Disconnected. Your host, Ryan Verrill, is your go-to source for the latest and most accurate information on home video releases, exclusive interviews with industry insiders and filmmakers, and has established a thriving community where every film and physical media enthusiast feels welcome. From hidden gems to blockbuster hits, The Disconnected brings you insider knowledge and a welcoming space to share your love of cinema. Watch every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific for the live announcements show and follow The Disconnected on social media to stay updated. Subscribe to The Disconnected on YouTube or on the podcast provider of your choice and dive into a world where every movie night is an adventure.
Okay, my number three, I mentioned my last one had two possible choices. This one actually has three possible choices in this cast. And it was directed by John Singleton, who has worked with a lot of musicians over the years. But I think this is like a pretty underseen movie that I have a lot of fun with. I actually think it's pretty underrated. It's Four Brothers from 2005.
Four adopted brothers with their mother gone.
Why would anybody want to kill the sweetest woman in the world?
All they have is each other.
I haven't seen you forever.
Did you get your teeth white?
And all they want is justice.
Can't all be saints.
This is gonna require a little finesse.
This is Detroit, in case y'all forgot.
Four Brothers, rated R. Friday, August 12th, only in theaters.
I want to highlight the performance specifically of Andre 3000, who is a member of Outkast. But the other two guys I could have chosen here are Mark Wahlberg, who, you know, I grew up in the time when Marky Mark was first part of the Funky Bunch. You know, he wasn't like an actor
exactly.
yet.
Exactly.
And then Tyrese is in there as well, playing a character named Angel. But have you seen Four Brothers before?
I have not. This is new to me. I have to find this one. It sounds great. Because I love Andre 3000. He's awesome. I mean, a few of the things he's been in have blown me away. So
yeah, he's great in this. It's probably going to be right up your alley because it's a revenge flick.
Okay.
It's set not in Philly, but it's set in Detroit. But it's got that like cold kind of like hockey loving atmosphere to it, which I always like. But it's about these four adopted brothers, and they come back together to their old childhood house because their adoptive mother was murdered. And then they start looking into it because there's no witnesses, and they start finding that maybe there's some corruption involved there, and she was not killed randomly. It was done for a reason. But it's a lot of fun. And I'm a sucker for a violent revenge flick, but I think what I like most about this is the interplay between the four brothers, because it does seem like they have grown up together. They just have this real great chemistry. Yeah, it's a movie with good big stakes. Like, there's a lot to it. And Andre 3000, he plays one of these brothers. And he's just really, really good in this kind of subdued role. He's the brother who's got a family. He's trying to kind of take things straight. Whereas like Mark Wahlberg and the other guys are kind of like, let's go kill everybody. And he's kind of the more the moral center, but he's really, really good in this. I'm also a huge fan of his music. For those who aren't familiar with Outkast, they released their first record in 94, Southern Playalistic Cadillac Music. And since then, they've won 6 Grammys across 6 albums. They've sold over 20 million records. And if you're active in the hip-hop community, Andre 3000 is widely known as one of the greatest rappers of all time. And I wish he would have done more stuff on camera, because I don't know if you've seen like the TV show The Shield, but he has like a small cameo role in The Shield, which is also really good.
I didn't realize. I was actually throwing one back at you. He's also in a more obscure show called Dispatches from Elsewhere. Have you seen this before? It's set in Philly. It's only the last few years. It's Jason Segel stars, but Andre 3000 plays this really amazing role. It's like, you mentioned sort of being more straight-laced, and he's almost like autistic in this role in a kind of really interesting way. Like, it's a really cool movie, a TV show, kind of a mystery show. Like, you're not quite sure where it's going, and where the turns it takes are really amazing. You know, it's almost like a game you play. You know, people sign up for a game, and Sally Field's in it. And so it's Jason Segel, Sally Field, Andre 3000 playing against each other. Really, it's a great chemistry. It's like, at least in the Four Brothers movie, the chemistry is interesting. You know, he has a nice ingredient to the stew, I guess.
What's cool. That called again?
It's called Dispatches from Elsewhere. I think it was an AMC show.
Okay.
It might be stream. I'm sure it's streaming somewhere, but it was really cool. And it's Philly set, which drew me to it, but it's worth it more than that. So that was cool.
All right. I got to make sure to put that on my list.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right. Two left here.
All right. So number two, this is maybe a little obscure, and I'm not honestly a huge fan of this musician. I mean, he's fine. He's great. I'm just never grew up as a fan, but Gene Simmons of Kiss was in a movie called, a Rutger Hauer movie called Wanted Dead or Alive.
It took the world's most notorious fugitive.
He's planning something real big
to bring the terror home to America. Now it's going to take America's most determined hero.
Why would you need me?
We need the best.
To bring the assassin to justice.
Stay out of this.
Rutger Hauer. Wanted, dead or alive. Rated R. Starts Friday, January 16th at a theater near you.
Back in, I think it was 86, 87. Directed by Gary Sherman, who I adore from Dead and Buried. Like, it's a great genre director. Gene Simmons plays like this Arab terrorist who's just the meanest man on earth. He's gonna love it. And as much as Kiss is over the top and expressive on stage, he underplays this thing too. It's like, it's just sort of simply, he just walks across the room like, ooh, like, who is this guy? You know? And I mean, and so it's having that, his badassness versus Rutger Hauer. Rutger Hauer plays a bounty hunter, ex, you know, CIA operative, who of course comes in to like apprehend this notorious terrorist who's played by Gene Simmons. It's not the most amazing action movie, but it's a very 80s action movie. And that to me is comfort food. You know, you're going to see, you know, someone trying to hold up a poor, you know, grocery clerk, and Rutger Hauer steps in to kick his ass, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, you want to see that kind of stuff, you know, how badass they are. And then he's after the big bad, and it's just, you know, so much fun. But I actually saw Gene Simmons in person a few months ago outside a movie theater here in LA.
Oh, yeah?
It was like, I did a double take. Again, I admire Kiss. It's cool. I just never grew up with them. It wasn't my thing. It's really, in grade school, it was like the band you like when you're trying to be edgy. Like, ooh, it stands for Kids in Service to Satan. You know, that kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, and I remember the big, she's probably too young for this, but the big shock when he finally appeared out of their makeup was a huge deal. I was like, oh my God, that's the cat guy. Look at it. So it's, you know, they're all middle-aged guys playing music. So anyway,
wow.
So that's a little deep cut, but I think it's worth a little, you know, it's worth a check out. If you're into Kiss, you should watch this movie.
Man, when you saw him outside of the theater, did you say, I loved your work and Wanted Dead or Alive?
I was afraid he'd punch me. You know, I didn't want to bother him, you know. But actually, I think he was there seeing his daughter, I believe, as an actor. And there was a movie that I was playing that I'm curious he was there to support her, which, you know, was, I want to say, I'm blanking on it. I shouldn't be blanking on this. But again, I was more stalled to see Gene Simmons hanging out on Vermont Avenue, you know, in L.A.
So, that's really cool. I remember Wanted Dead or Alive from my video store days. He's on the cover with like this ridiculously big pistol with like a giant sight on it. I had like a scope on there, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I remember the same time I saw that, it was like The Hitcher was out, because sort of Rutger Hauer, between that and Blade Runner, was like, to me, you know, he's one of the baddest of the bad. You don't want to mess with this guy. So that was fun to see him in this role.
You know, that reminds me of a pick that I could have put on this list and didn't. So I'm going to have to bring that up in my honorable mentions.
Okay.
I guess it's not your number one, because I know the person who's going to be your number one at this point. So yeah, Mick Jagger in Free Jack, if you remember that
movie. Oh, man. That's
like
a great one.
Bad guy against Emilio Estevez.
I can't believe I forgot that. I blanked on that one. Yeah, he's awesome.
Another video store classic. All right, my number two. This is another artist that I'm not really into. It's actually another country artist. And I'd be interested to know if you've seen this movie, because I think it's really good. And I think you would like it quite a bit. It's the movie Cisco Pike from 1972. And it seems like you have seen it, and Kris Kristofferson is the main character here.
He has tasted good and evil in your bedrooms and your bars, and he's traded in tomorrow for today. From the rocking of the cradle to the rolling of the hearse, the going up was worth.
Kris Kristofferson as Cisco Pike, rated R.
I never knew him as a singer. I only knew him as an actor because he was like, he was Whistler in Blade. He was in Convoy, Big Top Pee Wee, Heaven's Gate. But
Star is Born. One of the Star is Born. With Streisand. Yeah.
Yep. And I was sitting there thinking, like, what do I want to put as his movie? Because it could have been any of those. But I love Cisco Pike. And I've brought it up, but it's never made a list. I brought it up when Gene Hackman passed. I brought it up. It was a runner-up on top five films where the character's name is the title. Yeah. And he's so good in this. He's this washed-up folk singer turned small-time drug dealer in what would have been 1970 LA?
Yeah, 72.
Yeah, and he's just like kind of struggling to stay afloat. And then Gene Hackman, who plays this corrupt cop, he has stolen this stash of dope, and it's a lot. I mean, like, he uncovers this thing, and it's bricks of weed. And he wants to have Cisco Pike sell it, or he's going to arrest him. And so Cisco Pike has to go through, like, this kind of underbelly of Venice at the time. And it feels like a real companion to Easy Rider and Midnight Cowboy, those kind of movies. And he is really great as Cisco. I watched the trailer again for it today, and he reminds me of kind of a young Josh Brolin as he's in there. Like, just the look of him. And he's just kind of this really laid-back country singer who wants to get out of the weekend alive. And Gene Hackman is really good, because Hackman's at his best when he's, like, unraveling, and he is getting into some shit at the end of this movie.
He's jogging in place to keep his heart going, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's so funny you bring this up, because this is on my list, number one slot on this list for a long time the past week, because I was like, but I bumped it out because he plays a singer. I thought maybe it's too on the nose. And I adore this movie. In fact, I'm going to ruin this transmission, our recording, but, like, over my TV, literally in my living room, is a giant Cisco Pike poster. I love this movie. It's in my top five of all time, this movie. So
that's awesome.
I'm so glad you brought it up. It killed me to bump it, because I thought, well, that it's the one that didn't really fit the others. It's a major role. I actually love Kristofferson's music, too. He's great. I saw him in concert, a bunch of years ago, like 7, 8 years ago. Wonderful. I mean, just a gravelly, he's like the Sam Elliott of singers, you know, that voice, you know, really just, you know, anyway, I can go on. And him with Hackman is magic. And I'm blanking on her name. Karen Black, my God, my goddess, Karen Black. In fact, hold on, I can show you this. I literally.
Tight.
No, this is stupid, but, like, prove it a fan. I have a Cisco Pike lobby card, which I need to hang up on my office wall. I tell people these are my real parents to seem cool, but, you know. So, yeah, I adore this movie. I'm so happy you put this on there, because it was killing me. Like, it was in my honorable mentions. That's why I was like, oh, man. But didn't quite fit the rules for me. Yeah.
Well, it's always cool when the other person brings up a movie that you hated to leave off so you can talk about it, too.
Yes. Yeah. No. And it's many great roles. To me, Kristofferson, like, he has a, you know, really serious acting career, I think, too. I mean, he was, of all these guys we're talking about and folks, they seem like he really, that was as important as the music, it felt like, after a while. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, but he did. He had a ton of credits in both film and TV. And so when I was looking at his music career, the dude has put out 21 albums. And that's solo albums. He also was a part of the supergroup The Highwaymen.
That's right.
He's won 3 Grammys. He's in the Country Music Hall of Fame, and he won the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award in 2014.
So well deserved. So rest in power, Mr. Kristofferson. That's awesome.
Rest in power. All right, grand finale here.
Oh yeah. You probably know where I'm going with this. For my number one choice, it's also a Dwight Yoakam movie. It's Crank 2, High Voltage. Now, he was in Crank.
Oh.
Granted, he was in Crank. However, in High Voltage, he's next level Dwight Yoakam. Like, this is a guy who's essentially a doctor. He plays Dr. Miles. He's sort of the companion or the doctor, private doctor of Jason Statham's Chev Chelios, this, you know, underworld gangster. So he's one of those characters who, like, has this really rich life that you would never see, We get glimpses of it.
The storm on hot.
Put in one of those plastic artificial jumps.
How many bars is a battery charge?
One.
You got 1 hour. You got to keep your body electrically charged to keep it pumping.
Just man.
On April 17th.
You're going to tell me exactly who's got more heart.
Jeff Chelios is not dead.
I'm running on empty, Doc.
Yet.
Don't do anything strenuous.
Crank High Voltage, rated R, in theaters April 17th.
He explains to Jason Statham how an artificial heart works while he's slapping the ass, the bare ass of a cocaine-dusted hooker. It's amazing. It's an amazing piece. It's just like, what is he doing? Like, this is like Saturday morning. He's hanging out, you know, doing blow off, you know, someone's butt. And, you know, walking you through some really tough science. I thought it was pretty great. I mean, every time I love those movies, you know, Neville Dean and Taylor, the Crank movies, we know the premise. Jason Statham has to either keep moving or keep shocking himself to stay alive for very contrived plot reasons, but you go with it. It's a comic book. And Doc Miles and Dwight Yoakam, he just brings an extra level of wonder to it that I really appreciate. And that, to me, it was like, after a while, as I was mulling like you did for the past week or so, I'm like, dude deserves it. He deserves the top spot.
Holy shit. You know what? I should have known that you love the Crank movies, because there are elements of Crank in... Like that style of ticking clock in, was it The Blonde?
The Blonde, like, oh, the, yeah.
Yeah, I love that book, and I should have put that together. I thought for sure you were going to say Sling Blade, because Yoakam's amazing in Sling Blade, too.
Oh, that's funny. Okay. That's also, yeah, that, well, that'd be my more serious-minded pick, you know. But you're right, he's amazing in that, too. But I was going for, like, again, my role of, like, fun. What seemed like me, I'm sure he's going to be on blast in this movie, these movies. I'm sure he's just having the time of his life. So, yeah.
I'm sure. What is the quote? Don't fuck with Doc Miles.
Exactly.
Oh,
he's the one, like, you know, even though despite his personal, you know, sins, he's the one decent dude in these movies, too. He's really trying to help, you know.
Yeah, that's true. In between bumps.
You know? Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you need epinephrine, you know. Come on. He's just like, he's giving good advice. If you ever have this happen to you, you can actually, it's one to grow on from Doc Miles. So I appreciate that.
Right on. That's right. A great choice. My number one is another artist that I'm not super into their music, but when I saw this, I had only known him as a musician, and I was a little worried because he's going up against a stacked cast in this, and I remember walking out of this movie thinking, holy shit, this guy can actually act. And I don't think he's ever hit the heights of his first movie, although he came pretty close 2 years later. And this is the film Alpha Dog from 2006, and I'm talking about Justin Timberlake.
This kid has been kidnapped!
Stolen boy.
Maxim calls Alpha Dog riveting.
He goes home, everybody's looking at life.
It's edgy and startling.
There's a missing person poster on every street corner!
We could be in a lot of trouble.
That's what I told you!
Alpha Dog is raw and electrifying.
Come clean now! Now, John, you come clean now!
It starts the year off with a bang. This movie is on fire.
You gotta kill the kid.
Kill him?
That's a joke, right?
Alpha Dog, rated R, starts tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Have you seen Alpha Dog?
I have not, no.
It's really, really good. It's directed by Nick Cassavetes, and I think he wrote it as well. So, you know, you're in good hands with Nick Cassavetes, but...
For sure.
It's based on the true story of a kidnapping of a 15-year-old named Nick Markowitz. And it's essentially this group of drug dealers who is led by this dude, Johnny Truelove. He was 20 years old at the time. And I first learned about this guy watching the TV show America's Most Wanted back in the day. It would come on like Friday nights. My dad would always watch it. And I remember learning about this dude, and his name always stuck in my head. He's played by Emil Hirsch in the movie. And then everybody's kind of, they're playing...
Right. Okay.
Like surrogates for the real names of these people, but
right.
The guy that Timberlake plays is his right-hand man, so his best friend. And he's the one that's in charge of... So they kidnap this 15-year-old kid because his brother owes them money for drugs. And I think the brother's Ben Foster. So again, another great actor. And Anton Yelchin plays the 15-year-old, and he starts befriending this this... guy played by Justin Timberlake. Frankie is his name. And it's a really, really interesting, really well shot movie. And it starts as this reckless act and then it ends in tragedy. But the real sad part is that this character, Zach, Anton Yelchin, does not realize the danger that he's in, because it's like this Stockholm syndrome, where he's starting to become friends with them. And Frankie, Timberlake's character, is starting to grow. Like, he's starting to grow on him too. So there's a really heartbreaking part in this where he's like, go, like, you can go. And then he's like, no, because I like partying with you guys. And he sticks around.
Oh my God. Wow.
But like, sounds cool. it's a really good movie. And I was so surprised because I have never loved his like stage persona. And it's not like I disliked him, but he's just, you know, he's not a guy that I would want to hang out with. But here it's like, holy shit, this dude can really, really act. He's all tatted up. He looks the part. And it just really surprised me. I walked out of and like I said, great cast. Emil Hirsch, Bruce Willis is in this that we mentioned. Wow. Sharon Stone, Amanda Seyfried is in it. There's some really great actors in here. And Timberlake was the one that stuck out.
And what year is this?
2006.
Really, okay. So a little ways ago. I knew he had comedy chops in the SNL digital shorts, you know, the infamous True. Dick in a Box. I mean, and I knew he seemed like a funny guy. Like, it was like, he and like surprised me, and Ryan Gosling surprised me how funny they can be over the years. You see, they're one thing. Oh, they're just a pretty, you know, handsome guy, but they can do some serious comedy. And it's good to hear he has the drama chops too. That's awesome.
Yeah, I considered putting The Social Network on here too, because I think he's great in that too. But man, when I walked out, I remember walking out of this movie thinking like, wow, he could be an actor instead of a singer. He's really good in this.
That's excellent.
All right. Well, I know we've got some honorable mentions. But first, let's recap our list for the listeners, and I will go first. Sure. So at number 5, I had Jennifer Lopez as Selena in 1997. At number 4, I had Dwight Yoakam for his role in Panic Room from 2002. At number 3, I had Andre 3000 from Four Brothers in 2005, which you definitely need to see. At number 2, I had Cisco Pike, which you have seen many times, and Chris Christopherson's role in that. And then at number 1, I had Justin Timberlake from Alpha Dog from 2006.
Amazing list. I'm so happy with how they almost nearly collided, but didn't collide. We actually danced around a few people. My list, of course, number 5 was Alice Cooper in John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness. Number 4 was Debbie Harry of Blondie fame in Videodrome. Number 3, Tom Waits in Bram Stoker's, Francis Ford Coppola's Bram Stoker's Dracula. Yeah, exactly. Number 2, Gene Simmons of Kiss fame in Wanted, Dead or Alive. And of course, the VIP of this whole podcast, Dwight Yoakam in Crank 2 High Voltage. I think somewhere Mr. Yoakam's ears are buzzing. Like, wow, what's going on? But, you know, he is the hero of this episode.
No kidding. Dwight. What a great actor. Great list, man. We have put together a 10-film film festival for you cats that want to see some really great performances by musicians. But of course, the tough part about this, which we talked about at length, we got to rearrange our list because you can only have 5. So what are some of those films or actors that you had to leave off because they just didn't fit?
Well, you know, on my list for a long time was a very important movie to me, Prince in Purple Rain. But I thought ultimately, he's just playing Prince. It's almost like a concert film. It's fictionalized, I guess, in places, but it just felt like too close. This was a huge, huge movie for me. I remember my father renting it one weekend. I watched it 3 times because I was fascinated by everything, the music. I knew I could never be cool as Prince or be him, but I could possibly, if I tried hard, be Dr. Funk, his keyboard player. That was my goal in life. I wanted to be like the keyboard player for a Prince-like musician. The reason this topic appealed to me was, if I wasn't an obscure mid-list mystery novelist, I'd be an obscure musician, because I kind of put that career aside to do writing back in my early 20s. Oh, yeah? I was actually, that's when I made money for the first like 15 years of my, from age 10, literally, to 25. I played my father's bar band, a wedding band. That's how I made money. And I was not great, but I was decent enough where if I really wanted to go in that path, I would have, but I chose, of course, the lucrative field of mystery writing. So that's instead. But no, the music's, I mean, in all seriousness, music's super important to me. It still is. I mean, it's a part of my life every day. I listen to it nonstop. This topic really spoke to me. So thank you for suggesting it. I picked 5 honorable mentions. Should I do them all? Or you want to trade back and forth or just mention a few?
You can toss them out there real quick. That's fine.
Okay, really quick. Of course, Christopherson, we discussed Cisco Pike and Blade. I was torn because Blade is a lot of fun. Tina Turner in Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. She's wonderful in that. It has the misfortune of being my least favorite Mad Max movie because I think it kind of falls apart. But, you know, that said, she's great. Oh, I mean, she's kind of truly, truly wonderful in that, and not herself. Here's an obscure one for you. Harry Nielsen and Ringo Starr in Son of Dracula. Have you heard of this one?
Oh, no. No, I haven't.
Ooh. I saw it at the New Beverly a bunch of years ago, and I actually own a bootleg copy because no one's put it out because, to be honest, it's a horrible movie. It's not good at all. It's absurd. It looks like someone decided to get all coked out and make a vampire movie, and that's kind of what it is. However, there are some moments where I'm like, you know what? I'm watching Harry Nielsen. In fact, I have a friend of mine made for me a Harry Nielsen as Son of Dracula little figurine because I'm obsessed with the idea of that. And he has the album with him as Dracula. So, and then I guess at the ending of the movie, not to spoil anything, he does sing Without You while rising from the dead. It's kind of a nice moment. It's worth all the other stuff in the movie. Anyway, all right, last one, my other cameo, which it pained me because I wanted to put this in my top five, but Meatloaf in Fight Club. That was, yeah. I think he was a great, vulnerable, super memorable performance in a otherwise really amazing movie. So it's like, you know, oh my God, he stood out for me. I walked away from that thinking, wow, what a movie. Wow, was that Meatloaf? So
no, his name is Robert Paulson.
Yeah. It's kind of great. Anyway, those are my honorable mentions.
I'm looking at Son of Dracula right now. It looks like the whole thing can be watched on YouTube, so I might have to check that out.
Oh, okay. Well, check it out. I'm not saying it's good. I mean, in fact, just go with it. But well, it's interesting.
A lot of my favorite movies are those that nobody would call good, but if they're entertaining, you know, hits the spot.
I'm glad.
All right, couple that didn't make, you know, on my list of honorable mentions, only a couple have been mentioned at all, which is amazing. Somebody who you'd probably relate to, a keyboardist in this movie, is John Legend in La La Land. He plays the guy that tries to get Ryan Gosling into his band, and they play a song. I liked his performance in that. I've also got Phil Collins in Hook, if you remember his short performance in Hook.
Wow.
There's another one that could have had a couple in there. Smokin' Aces has both Common and Alicia Keys in there. And she's great in that. She was almost on my list.
Great pick.
This is one that I bumped off just today. And I did it because I thought you might have one of his films on, and we didn't talk about him at all, regrettably. But that's David Bowie in The Prestige, where he plays Tesla.
Bowie is almost too obvious, but I thought, but I just, I don't know, for some reason, it just, like, there was, he was the, he's the main role in like so many of these movies. So it's like, you know, anyway, great pick.
And then finally, you know, I was trying to fit in Madonna onto the list. I probably would have chosen Dick Tracy, but she was really, really great in a lot of good roles in the early 90s.
For sure, yeah.
So I regretted taking her off, but she was great in a couple good roles. I know she won awards for Evita as well. Dwayne Swierczynski, amazing lists, and I always love talking movies with you. I know you just like, you're really passionate about these, but you're passionate about other stuff too. The main thing that we want to promote here is your writing. So before we get to the books and where you can get those, because links to all those will be in the show notes, you got a newsletter. Let's talk about that for a second.
I do. It's kind of an outlet just to sort of, you know, be weird and, you know, show folks what I'm doing. But also I'm writing sort of a nonfiction book through the Substack and chapters here and there. And it's about basically I had a relative 100 years ago was killed by a gangster. And it's a cool untold Philly crime story. So I'm just like doing it live. And as I research into a chapter, I slap it up there. So you go to gleefulmayhem.com is my website. It's free. You know, if you want to support it, great. Awesome. I'm, you know, always looking for research money, but, you know, that otherwise it's there for people to check out. And yeah. And then the new thing is a new book is on James Patterson, December, $1 billion ransom, which is a lot of fun, and adapting. Yeah. California Bear, the latest novel. So I'm in California Bear land lately.
That's awesome. Well, your name's going to be everywhere soon. I can't wait to see it. Couldn't happen to a more deserving author. This is great. This is great to see.
You're very kind.
What did we leave off of our lists? Let me know at force5podcast@gmail.com or at patreon.com/force5. You'll find links to support today's guest and Force 5 in the show notes, so make sure to support. There are a few other ways you can support the show for free. First, leave a rating or a review wherever you are listening. Those ratings and reviews take only a couple seconds, but really help the show out. Second, tell a friend about the show. We could always use more list nerds. The Force 5 opening theme song was made by Nate Spears. The closing song was made by Cheesecake Chad, and the top 5 list bumper was produced by me with music from Audio Binger. You only get one life. Spend it with the people and the movies that you love.
Yo, check it, I'm on a mic just to let you know about the Force 5 getting at radio show. Talking movies, dropping knowledge, they the pros. They break it down like Kurosawa, turn the score, say it won't. From blockbuster indie hits, they got it all. Analyzing films, they never drop.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network, please select the link in the description